Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN and ESPN.com.
I'm Dave. I work at ESPN too.
You mean the Deuce, or
I don't know why also, my throat just like got all I'm a little sick
because you tried to do did you try to do like an announcer voice?
No, I was just trying to talk and my throat was full of like phlegm, and so it came out like.
And you're in Puck Soup. I listened to something about the movie First Man with Ryan Gosling. They were talking about previous space missions or other space missions. They said there was one where a dude had a head cold. That's like during the entire space mission, and because of gravity or lack thereof, he couldn't, like, it just stayed there the whole time. Like, he couldn't, like, blow his nose or. Oh, you thought it was going to be something where, like, his head exploded pressures of space?
I thought it would be the opposite. I thought, like, stuff would leak out more because he was all
of gravity?
Running. His nose was running.
And it would be like when you see liquid in weightlessness, it just kind of, like, comes out of his nose like a tapeworm.
And it's coming at you.
The capsule.
You can't do anything. Wait, you can't blow your nose. Oh, I guess you can blow your nose in the capsule. Why can't you blow your nose in the capsule? You just put pressure. It'll come out.
Right? You think so?
It has to.
Wouldn't the lack of gravity mean – isn't gravity part of the reason why it comes out? I don't know.
No, but you're blowing your nose. You're forcing it out. Gravity's not forcing it out.
Oh, fuck. Come
on. Like, gravity – I feel like Ryan Gosling either misunderstood gravity or the lack thereof, or you can blow your nose in space. Google, can you blow your nose in space?
Don't sneeze in space when astronauts get sick. This is from Time Magazine in 2012. Few people had a worse time in space than the crew of Apollo 7. Well, I don't know. I think Apollo 13 probably had a pretty shitty time, too. It wasn't just the 11 days they spent in orbit in 1968 test driving the new Apollo command module. Get to the point where they were sick.
So what's the story?
Even okay.
Can't sneeze probably in your helmet. That's gross.
Okay. A confined space with densely packed humans breathe recirculated air over and over again. Risk becomes worse. NASA resumes flights. Deep space. They're sick. Microbes, zero G. A cough or a sneeze on Earth blasts infectious particles from 3 to 6 feet away before gravity takes over and they fall out of the air. Mm-hmm. In space, they float everywhere.
Yeah.
When they do land, they don't settle in some safe, out-of-the-way place, because in a spacecraft, there is no out-of-the-way place. Instrument panels, food preparation surfaces, experiment racks are everywhere. Astronauts who do become infected are often less up to fighting the pathogen than they normally would be. So don't get sick in space.
So maybe you can't blow your nose, otherwise you will...
You'll get your shit everywhere.
That's what it is.
Okay,
you're not physically unable
to. All right,
to.
So maybe I was wrong that it was gravity that was keeping his mucus in his nose, lack of it.
Yeah,
it's just that if you do blow your nose or whatever, it's going to like go all the over the... It's not going to settle anywhere.
You're going to have to like... Yeah. Wow. Science!
Like, why didn't Damien Chazelle make that movie? Where it's
that.
Like, it's 2 hours of Neil Armstrong trying not to sneeze.
Just holding in a sneeze. Just, like, not looking at the light, just closing his eyes and just...
It's Ryan Gosling's smoldering, internalizing of angst because he can't sneeze.
That's interesting.
Do you want to see that flick, First Man?
Kind of. Not really.
I feel like it's going to be, like, it's going to sound good because dude made a musical and made Whiplash. It's probably going to have a lot of cool sound effects and shit.
You think it's going to be like a musical in space?
It's not going to be a musical in space.
I'm the first man in space. I won the space race in space.
Here's to the spaceships that space.
I'm over the moon for space.
Yes. All Neil Armstrong wants to do is open up a jazz cafe on the moon. That's all it's about.
Why not?
I kind of want to see it. I don't know, man. Like, can you do anything else besides what Apollo 13 did? I feel like I've seen a space movie. and like a pretty good one at that.
Yeah, and like you know what happens already. But mm-hmm. Apollo 13 nominated, won some Oscars maybe?
I think it was nominated at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like every space race movie is going to involve you knowing what happens at the end of it, right?
So I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless there's a big twist at the end.
That's what they should, yeah, like creative license. And then Neil Armstrong was eaten by aliens. Right. Credits roll.
That'd be amazing if at the end of First Man, and I've heard that there's like the ending is sort of not what you expect. They take some liberties with it. Like Ehrlich mentioned that, I think, in his review. It'd be amazing if they plant the American flag on the moon and the music swells and all of a sudden you hear, Neil Armstrong, I am Gleep Glorp of the Moon Clan. Welcome to the moon.
We must take you back to our planet to study you. And he's like, goodbye, Earth.
And also have sex with our women. And Buzz Aldrin's like, here I am, second man on the moon. They call me Buzz. Buzz, we have to get back to the capsule. We have to get back to the... No. I feel like one of us should stay here.
Just wait.
Yeah, but, you know, as an ambassador of sorts to the women of the moon. They call this one Buzz. So hockey, then.
Yeah, so hockey. It's a sport. It's a sport they play.
Where do you stand on the burgeoning debate? I wrote about it on Friday.
Against?
It's been covered on Sportsnet. It was covered in TSN. It was written about by the venerable, he likes when I call him venerable, Bruce Arthur. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid versus Austin Matthews. Now that Austin Matthews is on pace, you just made a face and you made your hand thing. He's on pace for 145 or 3 goals in that neighborhood.
Okay.
Who is the better player?
Connor McDavid.
Who would you take if you had one game to win?
Connor McDavid. What are we doing? What are we doing?
When you die and you go to the pearly gates, what would you like to hear St. Peter say to you?
Don't overreact after 4 games. People. Are you serious?
What? This is the thing. Ray Ferraro told Bruce Arthur that McDavid might be a 1, but Matthews is like 1A right now. That McDavid is ahead, but Matthews is at his shoulder, is what he said.
So this is now the new Crosby-Giroux, huh? This is our new thing? McDavid-Matthews? Well,
I don't think we've had someone as brave as Peter Laviolette to state the obvious, which is that Claude Giroux is the best player in the world and therefore better than Sidney Crosby. We haven't had our Laviolette moment of someone standing up and being like, yes, Austin Matthews is better than Connor McDavid.
But clearly, John Tavares is better than both of them, right? That's the deal. Are we going to do that next?
No, we're not. No. This is. We've been trying to make this McDavid versus Matthews match now for a couple of years, and now that Matthews has worked on his shot, I read a Justin Bourne article on The Athletic that talked about it. Like he's shooting the puck better, and then Connor is still Connor. And what's happening now is though it's morphing into the classic player versus player argument, where it's now Connor's better. And he's doing much more with less. And all the Leafs fans are like...
Kind of is.
But all Leafs fans are like, have you seen Zach Hyman? Like, that was Matthews' guy.
Where would Zach Hyman rank on the Oilers' hierarchy of forwards at this point?
He would be on the third line because he's near Lucic. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's... man, I just...
So you don't have time for McDavid versus Matthews. You don't think there's a scenario in which Austin Matthews could be the better player? At some point?
I mean, all right, let's say Connor McDavid, let's say his arm is eaten by a wolf. Just from, like, the elbow down, ripped off.
Well, I mean, he's in Alberta. It's at least plausible.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen the mascot?
Right.
Mascot
could be the mascot.
Right. Then...
It could be one of those scenarios where Hunter, close. The mascot, is looking around the locker room and he sees McDavid and McDavid morphs into, you know... A turkey on a platter, like in the old, you know, Looney Tunes cartoons.
I mean, look, it's not Crosby-Giroux. It's closer than that, but it's the second week of the season. I'm not there yet, man. Like, I get it. Toronto's jacked up for the new hockey season. They got John Tavares. They're scoring a bunch of goals. You know, go crazy. But yeah, no.
Matthews, so better dresser, gives a much better Zoolander face in his photo shoots. Mm-hmm. Bigger. He's 6'3".
American.
220. American.
Sure. Got that going for him, but but no. No.
He's a big... It's kind of a Gretzky-Lemieux thing. He's like the bigger-bodied guy.
Oh, we're doing Gretzky-Lemieux
now. He's got his wingspan. And then Connor's like smaller, probably needs Dave Smenko out there to protect him. Mm-hmm. You know, in this case, Milan Lucic.
Also, he doesn't have, like, a Nick Lidstrom-esque defenseman on his team.
All right, you want to talk about that? So, I guess we should just probably talk about the fact that the Leafs are a juggernaut at the beginning of the season. As we do the podcast, they're 4-1. Their lone loss coming to the Ottawa Senators.
How many goals have they allowed in 5 games?
20.
20.
How many have they scored? 25.
Yeah, so they're winning every game 5-4. Technically, sort of. So
I'll have you know that the Leafs have scored more goals than the Oilers, Coyotes, Lightning, Panthers, Minnesota, Montreal combined. I think. I didn't do the math.
Well, they've played 5 games.
Wait, 11, 18, plus 9. No, they take out Edmonton. The rest of them, though.
A lot to be excited about, Toronto, for sure. No reason not to be going into the year.
The thing that you referenced before is the fact that Brian Burke on Sportsnet on Friday said that he said, wait, I'll find the actual quote because it's fucking great.
God.
I know. You're hurt. It's not. You're like, why, Burke?
It's 2 weeks in. We do this every year. Like, oh, scoring's up. Yeah, no one's playing D. I put on a Carolina Ranger game last weekend, and it was 5-5, and I saw 3 more goals. It was an 8-5 game. Oh, that's the thing we should definitely talk about today, too, is Carolina's celebration.
Did we not talk about that last time?
I don't think so.
I think we did.
I think last time we did this, I couldn't remember Carolina's captain, and it turned out they had the coolest captain in the league.
Said Brian Burke,
he's almost on autopilot. He reminds me right now of Nick Lidstrom when Nick Lidstrom was in his prime.
He said that of Morgan Rielly. He said Morgan Rielly reminds him of a Nick Lidstrom in his prime.
In his prime. Not just Nick Lidstrom.
Yeah, I know.
Not like Nick Lidstrom at the same age or starting out or nope.
Yeah.
Same guys.
My follow-up question would be like, does this have anything to do with the fact that you drafted him and you want to claim some, you know, semblance of responsibility for when the Leafs do win the Cup?
Yeah.
Which I get.
If they win the Cup and Morgan Rielly is on the team and he plays like Nick Lidstrom, I think that means I get my name on the Cup. I get a ring, personally.
Boy, Toronto, man.
I don't need some whippersnapper like Kyle Dubas saying all the credit for the team I built.
How'd you build it, Brian?
I built a team of truculence, pugnacity, gritosity, punchidity. I hired a great man in Randy Carlyle. The fans drove out of town with their chants because they don't know.
Does Brian Burke take credit for Gritty at any point?
Gritty was my invention. I had the plans for Gritty back when they hired me to win a cup with the Anaheim Ducks. And I said, you know, this duck, not nearly pugnastic or bleedosity or, you know, gash-inducing. You need a better mascot. So I free-handed Gritty on a cocktail napkin, and I tied my tie to the end of it, and I threw it at our owner like bait on a hook, but he didn't take it. But I came up with Gritty many years ago. Gritty reminds me of the Philly Fanatic in his prime.
In his prime. Nick Lidstrom in his prime.
Nick Lidstrom in his prime.
He had a long prime, too.
Yeah.
Like, what's the worst Nick Lidstrom prime year, and will Morgan Rielly ever achieve that year?
To frame it properly, maybe for some of you kids out there that don't remember Nick Lidstrom in his prime, Nick Lidstrom would have won the Norris Trophy every single season, but he at one point finished a -1.
Yes.
And then he was ineligible to win the Norris that year. They're like, he's so fucking good, but at least we can make the argument that we can't give him the Norris because he was a -1 this year.
Those were the days. Plus minus.
Nick Lidstrom in his prime. Well, I mean, the good news, I guess, for the Leafs is that as a defensive juggernaut, a team that has only given up 20 goals in its first 5 games, they don't have to look for a defenseman anymore to help them win the Cup.
That was sort of the thing about John Tavares. They got John Tavares. They're like, what about the defense? Well, now that's one more goal the defense can allow because John Tavares is going to
They don't need any
score more.
Forget, save your Drew Doughtys.
This is the future.
Save your Eric Karlsson's.
Sport of the future.
You don't have to go and dabble in the dark arts of Duncan Keith.
Nope. 5-4 every game, baby.
Yeah. You've got Morgan Rielly. You've got Nick Lidstrom in his prime.
Well, they're still giving up 20 goals with Nick Lidstrom in his prime.
Maybe they don't have Chris Osgood in his prime back there.
Maybe he's not being deployed properly the way Randy Carlyle would deploy him.
Do you think Mike Babcock looks at Morgan Rielly? He's like, you know,
I didn't see it before, but now that Berkey said it,
definitely Nick Lidstrom at this prime.
Someone has to ask Babcock that question. Hey, so Brian Burke said Nick Lidstrom at his prime. What do you think? Yeah.
Well, it's like if you took Bobby Orr and you hollowed out his body of all his organs and muscles and stuff, and you stuffed Nick Lidstrom inside of that carcass. So it's like Nick Lidstrom, but he's wearing a Bobby Orr skin suit.
Uh-huh.
That's Morgan Rielly at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Norris Trophy.
They don't. I'm sorry. They don't have a trophy right now for Morgan Rielly. The Norris Trophy doesn't cover how good he's playing. They'd have to invent something else.
Right.
Create something called like the Rielly Trophy.
Love the first 2 weeks of hockey season, baby.
It's like the Norris, but like only for Morgan Rielly.
Know what else I love about the hockey season?
What's up?
Is how there's no games tonight. It's
Friday. As we do this show on a Friday night, yeah.
It's Friday the 12th.
Mm-hmm. There's been a couple nights like that where there's just inexplicably been no hockey. Also, I love about hockey the fact that, like, the Leafs have played 5 games, San Jose, Vegas, and Florida, the Devils, Tampa, and the Oilers have all played 2.
No,
now, Vegas, Tampa wasn't...
Vegas has played 3 or 4. Vegas is 1 and 3.
No. I'm saying Vegas has played 5.
Oh, they played 5.
Yeah, the Leafs...
Oh, 1 and 4?
San Jose and Vegas have all played 5. Like, the Devils and Florida and Edmonton were overseas. Tampa wasn't overseas, though, was it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so who knows? Who's to say? All right.
No one can know for sure.
No one can be sure.
It's impossible.
There's no way to know.
Can't figure that out.
As we look at the early hot takery in the NHL, Toronto is 4-1. Do you is there any team that's kind of changed your mind about anything? You said Carolina, I think, was one of the teams that's changed your mind about it.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be a playoff team, but apparently they're going to be the best team in the league. Carolina Hurricane hockey, baby! Score some goals, win some games, and skate to the glass.
It's fucking amazing to me that, like, we spend so much time poring over numbers and going through things and being like, they need a left-handed shot on their second power play unit or else it's all going to fall apart. And, oh, we got to boost up the Fenwick of this team if they're going to have a chance at the old Lord Stanley's chalice. And then it comes down to, hey, this team's having fun now, and they're winning because of it. Like, that's how dumb this sport is. Like, Carolina is talented. They've got an infusion of young scoring. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, they're probably 3-0-1 out of the gate because they're, like, it's more fun.
Disagree.
They're happy.
I agree, actually. Here's the thing is that the thing you can't quantify sometimes in hockey is heart. Like, let's take, for instance, Boston Bruins, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
0-1. Bad team, blown out, 7-0. What happens? Brad Marchand punches a guy in the face.
Right.
Record since then, 3-0.
That's right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. They played Ottawa, Buffalo, and someone else bad. I forget who it was.
Edmonton.
Doesn't matter.
They punched the guy in the face.
Brad Marchand punched the guy in the face.
Yeah.
Set the tone.
Yeah. The Bruins went back to the room that night and said, Marshy's there.
Yeah.
Marshy's not going to let a guy celebrate. Maybe he celebrated. He kind of skated by. In a 7-0 game. Marshy's not standing for it.
Nope.
We shouldn't stand for this either, boys.
And boom.
Yeah.
6 points, 3 games.
If I had to say there is a team that has changed my perceptions of it, I mentioned this, I think, in the mailbag. Like, I feel dumb the Capitals, not having picked the Capitals to maybe win the Cup again because of the fact that they are a really good team and now unburdened. And they would have won, like, 7 cups by now if it weren't for the fact that they get all fucking shrinking sphinctered in the playoffs and they start shitting themselves when they went to a game 7. Now they're not. Now they're playing with house money because they finally got their cup.
We talked about this, but like it's October. You don't know what the sphincter is going to do until April.
Mm.
So like now,
it won't be shrinking.
You don't know.
Do you think that they're intimidated to play the Penguins now?
First time they have to now have everybody coming after them.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know. Again, it's April.
Yeah.
I mean, it's October. Mm-hmm. Right? Hold on. Let me look at my phone. Yeah, it's October. So, I mean,
there's every chance that Ovechkin's going to play every playoff game wearing his ring under his gloves. It's possible.
They should do that.
I'm telling you.
The whole team.
They're unburdened. They might be a dynasty now. They might win the next 3 cups because they don't care.
What's their record right now?
Right now?
3-1.
The Capitals, as we do this show, are 2-1-1.
2-1-1. They've won half their games.
They lost to the Devils 6-0, but that was because they had Phoenix Copley.
And they played
great, but also gave up some shitty goals.
Beat Vegas, beat a Bruins team coming back from Europe, and now you got them winning 4 straight cups.
Which team do you think has the better shot at the cup right now? The Blackhawks who are 2-0-2, or Anaheim, who is 3-0-1? Who's going to win the cup out of those two teams?
Oh, what a question.
One of those two teams will definitely win the cup.
I mean, obviously, that's your Western Conference final at this point, right?
Well, so, yeah. Might as well. I mean, yeah, provided that one of them doesn't, you know, stumble down to the wild card by accident.
No, I mean, with the way they've started, there's no way that's going to happen.
But seriously, though, are you worried about Vegas? So Vegas, as we do the show, is 1-4. They've given up 19 goals. They've only scored 10. That's not a lot.
I don't think they have a power play goal yet. They might have one, but they haven't been scoring.
Stastny's hurt. Pacioretty's scoring. The top line isn't exactly kicking ass and taking names quite yet. They obviously miss Nate Schmidt, our sweet boy, framed for a crime he didn't commit.
Yep, just like Richard Kimball.
I need to search every outhouse. Oh, wait, it's Vegas. Every whorehouse, a poker room for Dr. Nate Schmidt. Speaking of The Fugitive, your boy was writing his column on Thursday night, and guess what was on HBO? U.S. Marshals. What a weird movie.
Not a great movie, but still fine.
It's entertaining, but, like, what a weird concept of being like, we're going to take Tommy Lee Jones and these randoms and do The Fugitive again, but it's about them and not about Wesley Snipes, who was The Fugitive.
Yeah.
If I had said it was Wesley Snipes, would you have remembered it was Wesley Snipes as The Fugitive?
Sure. Yeah, he's got the part of the glasses in the cast. I remember that.
Right, and he undoes his handcuffs. The interesting thing about that movie that I forgot about was, do you remember who the
You're talking to me like I don't know U.S. Marshals, my friend.
Now, do you remember Tommy Lee Jones? He was in a movie where him and Will Smith wore these suits. Yeah. No, listen.
Captain America.
I forgot that Robert Downey Jr. was like, it's sort of a proto Tony Stark performance. It's kind of like very sort of snappy and confident and belligerent.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
And he kills people.
He also almost fucks up the whole mission by trying to get Wesley Snipes on his own. Yeah. And then Wesley Snipes like shoots Tommy Lee Jones. It's a very entertaining film. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
For the most part. And Joey Pants is in it.
Good movie.
The Vegas Golden Knights right now.
I still believe in them a little bit.
I still believe in them, too. I want to, at least. I mean, I think you have to give them some time at home. Marchessault, 6 points, 5 games. Carlson, 4 assists, 5 games. Riley Smith, 2 goals. The top line's doing something.
Top line's fine. But, yeah, they're not getting goaltending.
Paul Stastny hurt. Pacioretty, 1 goal in 5 games.
It's 5 games.
Second line, not really doing much, but you know, Stastny's out. You think they'll be all right?
Not ready to sell just yet. A little concerned, you know, but like the game against the Penguins, were like, here's Casey DeSmith, and they still were like, nope.
What if I was to tell you that Marc-Andre Fleury has an .846 save percentage? Would that concern you?
5 games. Right. Not even all five. He hasn't played all five, so...
I out of all the things that people were saying about Vegas regressing,
bad contract though.
It's a horrible contract.
Real bad. Doesn't even start yet, right? Or no, it does. Yeah, it's already started.
Has it? I actually said that to George McPhee when I talked to him in the preseason. Did I tell you that?
Did you?
Yeah.
Greg, good to see you. Contract. What?
I think we got done and we were just kind of shooting the shit. I'm like, that Fleury contract, huh? And he said something along those lines of like, you know, he put him over as.
Worth more than
No. Like everybody he talked to, and Fleury himself and his goalie coach and everybody says that in the last few years he's been a different goaltender, and that they think that for the duration of that contract he can be that goaltender. In my own opinion, they're signing a guy because someone named their dog after him.
Right.
Yeah.
He is the face of the franchise.
Of the franchise, right?
But.
How do you not re-sign Marc-Andre Fleury when you have Marc-Andre Fleury in your community?
Well, they could have signed Scott.
Where is this going?
Barkling? I was trying to do a Scott Darling
bit. Scott Barkling.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That's stupid.
Now I'm thinking, oh, God, now why can't I think of any other... any other dog name?
It's goals. Hard. I remember somebody doing this with like someone was like someone on Twitter was like, "I got a dog. Name the dog with like a sports pun." Mm-hmm. And I sat there for like 5 minutes.
Oh,
like, I can't think of
it. Corey Pofford.
There you go.
There it is.
That was close.
We almost blew the whole thing.
Oh my god.
You okay?
And if it was a cat, you go Marc-Andre Perry.
Perry.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
Katie Perry.
Just wanted to get something out there.
As of right now, as we do Puck Soup, the league average goals per game for teams is 3.20.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absurd.
That's what it always is now. It was above 3 for the longest time last year. We do this every year.
The save percentage across the league is 905, which is the save. The save percentage, by the way, in the post lockout batshit year was 901, and the goals per game was 3.08. I think we're going to continue upward trend of goal scoring. It's a lot of fucking goals, though. Very much. It's too many goals.
I think it'll be close to what it was last year. I don't think it's going to be much higher.
Give me a good 2-1 trap-filled game, baby.
Boy, give me one of those, like, 17-16 shot games.
Yeah.
Chipping and chasing.
Can you imagine if, like, we've passed into the twilight zone of the NHL where, like, those games are going to be the ones that people clamor for? Instead of people being like, oh, man, give me 7 games of Predators Jets. Put it in my fucking veins. People are going to be like, oh, the warm blanket of an old 2-1 game. Both teams get 12 shots. Physical to the end.
A chess match.
A chess match, if you will.
Ah, yeah. Two coaches matching up lines and D pairs against each other. Oh, yeah. That's what's going
to
sell the game.
The roar of the crowd is one team is limited to 8 shots in a period.
Mm. That's going to start again. We do this every year. Mm-hmm. Once teams start getting their structure set, we'll be back.
Well, you know what? I mentioned the roar of the crowd, and if you want to hear the roar of the crowd,
what's the best way?
I think you might need yourself a Sonos Beam. Sonos! It's a proud sponsor of Puck Soup this season. Meet Sonos Beam, the smart, compact soundbar for your TV and the newest addition to the easy-to-use home sound system. I've got the Beam at home, and here's what the deal is. It is like surround sound coming out of one big old beam under your TV. And the other thing about the Beam that I love is that it is a multimedia experience. If I'm listening to somebody's dumb podcast where they spend the first 10 minutes talking about snot in space,
yep,
and then they spend the rest of the time talking about hockey,
mm-hmm,
I want to take that podcast with me. The Sonos Beam can play me that podcast. Another Sonos speaker could play me that podcast in another room. It's a whole kind of multimedia situation. The Beam lets you play everything you love, from music to radio to movies to TVs to podcasts and more. You can even use AirPlay to enjoy sound from your iPhone or iPad on the Beam. Rich sound that fills the room with deep bass and detailed stereo separation from music, plus crystal clear dialogue for TV and movies. All it takes is one cord to connect the Beam to your TV, and it syncs with your existing remote. Or get the hands-free control with Alexa, which is built in.
Hmm.
Now, the Sonos app will walk you through the setup step by step, but even if you don't want to bother setting up your speakers, Sonos will send someone to do it for you. That's right. If you live in any major metropolitan area, sorry, Moose Knuckle Canada, Up and Running will have a Sonos expert deliver and set up your system absolutely free. It's a very easy process to set up. We'll come and help you do it. Just order from Sonos.com, Sonos.com, and select Up and Running at checkout to see if you qualify. The Sonos Beam, I own it and I love it. There's my endorsement.
There it is. That's a pitch.
That's a pitch for you. All right.
Speaking of pitches, Clayton Kershaw just gave up a home run to the reliever. some guy came out of the bullpen for the Brewers, starting with 2 innings, and then the reliever came in, so they let him bat, and he homered off Clayton Kershaw. I don't even know who the guy is. Sports
happening right here live on the Hockey Podcast.
All right. Our guest this week is Scott Snyder. Now, Scott Snyder, for those who don't know, is a very accomplished comic book writer.
Mm-hmm.
He revolutionized the Batman comic working with artist Greg Capullo. They did a hell of a run on the Batman book and did something that we talked about in our interview, which was he created something new for Batman. He created the Court of Owls narrative, which introduced new characters and changed the bat story of Batman. It was really cool. He has also written American Vampire. He's worked on any number of other comics, including Swamp Thing.
American Vampire.
From my neck. He did something called Dark Knight's Metal, which was a huge success, and it was just a batshit kind of space-based book that involved the whole Justice League, and we talk about that. He's also a huge hockey fan. He's a Rangers fan. He and I are around the same age, which means we get into some of that 1994 bullshit with him. I cried on his shoulder a little bit.
You think Batman says, like, I'm taking a bad shit? Or no, because he said bad shit. It made me wonder, like, what that.
Do you think he, like, I think, like, the Adam West Batman would have labeled it.
That would have been his bit, yeah.
Robin, I'm taking a bat shit on the Bat-commode.
Robin's like, TMI, Adam West. God, stop with your bits.
Right now, Scott Snyder is writing Justice League, and it's a really solid book. It's a good conversation, man. It's one of those dudes that I really respect and is very good at his job, and I just wanted to ask really good questions, which of course means we ended by talking about Batman's dick, which is a topic that has come up on this podcast.
Why would you not?
That's right.
Why would you not?
All right. Recorded at Comic-Con New York. Here's Scott Snyder.
Scott Snyder is a DC Comics superstar and a hockey guy, which means that's why he's on this podcast. Tell us, Scott, how you developed your love of puck.
Oh, man, I played it here as a kid. We used to play roller hockey over at Carl Schultz Park in New York. So we'd go over and play, and it was like the era when it was like Laidlaw and Van Beesbrook and all those guys on the Rangers, yes. You know? And I was in it all the way. My dad had season tickets at Madison Square Garden all the way up in the nosebleeds. And then one of his friends, a guy he worked with actually, who had money, got us upgraded our seats, knew somebody at the Garden, and got us down into, once it became the Rainbow, got us down into the Reds.
Yeah.
So we had those tickets forever. We had them all the way through the Stanley Cup, the Messier team. And if you look at the famous pictures, my sister and I are in the picture, some of the pictures of them holding the cup that, like, you know, the Sports Illustrated one. So we were really big. And then I played ice hockey over at Sky Rink over here when it was over. I don't know if it still exists, but it was over in the West 30s. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, dabbled with the Islanders. It was like the Potvin era, all that stuff.
Well, you and I are on the same age, which means that in your formative years, you got to, we both got to experience glory. I'm a Devils fan.
Oh, okay.
Cool. So, I mean, the Rangers beat us in 94, and I was very sad. I remember vividly crying in my living room. But you got to experience, like, one of the greatest moments in New York sports history.
I did.
As a kid, yeah.
And then I went to the parade. I went down. I remember being down by Wall Street.
Right, when they treated them like astronauts.
I know. I was the ticker tape. It was crazy, right? Dude. It was crazy. I was in high school. It was just a blast. It was a great era. But watching my kid now plays deck hockey, and he's learning how to ice skate right now. He actually had a lesson just yesterday again, and he's getting pretty good. So he really wants to do ice hockey himself. He's 11, and so his team, it was called the Avengers, which was humiliating some of DC guys. So I was like, what? But now it's called the Goats, which is, like, supposed to be the greatest of all. They have a joke where they're like, it's either going to be the greatest of all time or just a dirty farm animal if we do terrible. So I love their team. He's been on the same team for, like, 4 years. So.
What's life as a hockey dad like for you? Was it better, like, something you obviously hadn't experienced before? What's that like?
I love it, dude. We've been to the Garden quite a few times. My dad is still a really big fan, too, so he takes him sometimes, like, when I can't go, or they can do, like, a grandpa, you know, grandpa-grandson thing. And it's great. We have, like, MSG out by where we are. We watch the games, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was really hopeful last year. He was bummed when they didn't make it.
Yeah.
You know. And so this year he's sort of rooting. Just last night, I think he was writing me about it.
Was your dad the one who got you into hockey?
Yeah, he was. It was really weird. Like, I was about 7 years old, 8 years old. I was literally at the playground. I vividly remember this because this guy, I was playing with a Transformer. And this dude walked up, Grimlock, and this dude, like, walked up and was like, hey, listen, I see you playing with your kid, to my dad. And he was like, I got tickets to the Ranger game tonight. I can't go. You should take your kid. Do you want him? They're right here. And my dad was like, sure. Neither of us had ever been in hockey, whatever. And we went, and the Rangers won 5-4. And I just loved it. I loved everything, the fights, everything. And it was at a time at the Garden, too, where it was much more, less corporate, a little bit more, like, it was, remember when it was,
more
like,
by the blue seats.
It was the blue seats.
Yeah,
it wasn't the Rainbow. It was the it was the purple and the blue, whatever, right. And they had Vito the Dancing Ranger and all those like weird, the Chief, the character.
Oh, yeah.
All those guys, so it was a lot of fun, and you felt part of a community, you know? You still do, but I mean, it was very intimate then, so we really loved it.
As a Transformers fan from back in the day, do you often have an existential crisis about how they've not captured the actual designs of the characters in the films, yet they make money?
I really did. And now I saw the ad for Bumblebee, and they're using the original things.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why am I not a kid right now?
Not only are they using the original things, they basically made it the Iron Giant.
I know.
And this is very smart.
That was my kid's favorite movie. Yeah, we have the... it was embarrassing. I bought it for myself more than him, but it was like a $400 statue, the Iron Giant, this big, and he has Hogarth in his hand.
Yeah.
And when you put Hogarth in it, the eyes light up, and he goes, Fred.
Oh, my God.
Awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Rangers real quick. If when you look at Henrik Lundqvist and his career,
are you
surprised he's still there? Do you figure he would have just... They're in a rebuild now. He's like 30-some-odd years old.
Is he 40? He's 39.
He's like, he's up there. Yeah. Do you think he's going to be one of these guys that just spends his whole time with the Rangers, or do you think he's going to head out and say, I can't, I need to go try to win somewhere?
I don't know, you know? I mean, I understand how frustrating that must be, and he can be so good, but I'm that age, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I'm like, I can't even pick up a box around the house without getting injured, so...
Which is not advantageous for a comics writer, I imagine.
And so, I don't know, man, but I'm still so in love with him. Like, he's been there so long, and we've been, so... You know, you see him come out, everybody gets it's so charming, you know, to have people like that have been there that long, you know, and all that stuff. So, I don't know, you know, I just hope they do well with him this year, that's it. You know, I know it's a rebuilding year, I know it's rough, but I don't know. You always hope something magical happened, you know.
Here's the part of the interview where I transitioned to comics.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Guardians project with the NHL when Stan Lee created superheroes for the NHL?
I do vaguely remember this, yes.
Was that a horrible...
It's
a horrible idea.
It's
a horrible idea in concept.
It's pretty bad. I mean, you know, you got to give Stan credit for always, like, giving it a shot. Excelsior, you know? But that said, it's a hard crossover. I think the thing is, you know, what I love about hockey... especially aside from just sort of the energy of it, is when you love sports, like you have something you follow with your kid, it's like a serialized story where you're like, they lost this week, but they're going to win next week.
Right.
What's going to happen?
Yeah,
you know?
every new issue can change the dynamic.
Exactly. Yeah. New characters, new everything. So
finally, when on the hockey tip, when you walked into Batman and Robin and saw in the first 10 minutes they had bat skates.
Oh, my God. I know that movie is like... I definitely like. It's hard because that one definitely kind of broke my heart in terms of the campiness, like going beyond. And I love Batman 66, but you know when it gets so ridiculous, it's hard to wrap your head around.
We legitimately. Well, I remember the summer it came out. My friends and I sat for a week and wrote a parody of the movie online called Batman Sucks Forever because you were so damaged by the film. It's the craziest thing. You're like, on the one hand, holy shit, Batman's playing hockey. On the other hand, I know.
It's one of those things like you thought you wanted and then you see it and you're like, no, I never wanted it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so I read a little bit about your approach to characters and particularly Superman, the idea that you take what the character is, make that the core, build off of it.
Yeah.
So to you, when you took over the Batman book, what was Batman to you?
Well, Batman to me, ultimately, the reason he's so relatable is that he's one of the few characters that's purely human.
And right.
He's somebody who suffered a tremendous tragedy as a kid. This meaningless thing, you know, this guy just killed his parents over nothing, over a broken string of pearls. And most people, I think, or a lot of people, would be shattered by that and find that life doesn't have any meaning. And instead, Batman is all about making his life matter, turning himself into an engine of meaning and saying any terrible thing that happens to you, you use as fuel to make sure that never happens again to somebody else and that you're going to make your life inspiring and matter. And in that way, I think he's an incredibly simple and enduring inspirational story, a folk hero.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of like craziness to him. There's the cars and the cave and the awesomeness and the one-liners and all that stuff is so much fun. But at his heart, to me, he's about, you know, taking the bad things in your life and using them as fuel to do good. And that to me is what makes him so lasting.
And I can kind of see it, like, a lot of your work on that book was very much putting him through the ringer. dealing with your trauma, dealing with your nightmares, and I kind of see that being the approach there, you know.
It is.
You know, you're the sum total of the experiences that you have, and how you cope with those experiences is what you become.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Rare is the writer that gets to enter something in the Batman canon the way that you entered Court of Owls.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, you know, you think Dini with Harley and you think Hush maybe, but then, like, Court of Owls, I mean, it's just part of it now, and that's going to be pretty exhilarating.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, you know, when we did it, it was the first time I'd ever written Bruce Wayne. I was so scared as it was, and doing a new villain was doubly terrifying. And
yeah.
The fact that it's become part of the mythology is just, I'm so grateful to the fans and to DC for being so supportive and taking a chance with us. I mean, it's the greatest thrill ever to see people dressed up as them or see them on the TV show or any of that stuff. It's like,
right.
It really is. You just, you're like, oh, you want to go back and tell your 10-year-old self like yeah. about it, because, you know, they'll think you're finally cool. So.
But, like, as a writer, what a moment when DC comes to you and you're like, the thing that you did is so good, we're going to give you a spin-off book from the thing that you made.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's insane, right?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I still pinch myself about how well all of it has gone and you know, that I get to wake up and do this every day, mm-hmm. and it's a joy.
From a functional standpoint, I've always wondered, so when Tom King takes over the book, right, mm-hmm. do you have a powwow? Do you trade notes?
Yeah.
To be like...
Yeah, well, I already knew, Tom and I were already good friends because we had done some work together with Robin Moore stuff and
okay.
with Grayson. You know, he was in our group, and mm-hmm. also with Batman Eternal, we had talked a lot. So I knew him all the way from when he had begun at DC, and he was the person that I also wanted to take Batman when
oh,
I
was. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
when Mark Doyle came to me and was like, hear the people were thinking, I was like, Tom is definitely the one that I think is going to do a great job, and I'm so proud of him, you
yeah.
know? He's one of my best friends, so I mean, there's 100% a powwow where it's like, here's the way I'm going to leave it, is there anything you want me to do? And then he's like, here's what I'd like to
oh,
do.
Oh, so you, in the last few issues, you're actually playing a little bit of setup maybe for
oh, yeah, yeah.
what he wants to do.
Well, I just told him, he was like, do whatever you want, you've earned that. And I was like, well, the way I'd like to end it is to put everything back the way it was and set it up for you.
Right.
And not leave you with like, Bruce Wayne died? You know, like, I'm not going to do that to you or he's in jail.
It always reminded me of this challenge they have on Top Chef where one chef...
I love that. I know exactly. We watch it all the time.
They start the meal, then they tag out the other guy because he has to figure out what they were trying
was.
To make. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It always seemed like that in comics, but I guess there's a bit more of a deliberate,
oh, no.
I know this guy's going to grab the baton from it.
It really is. I mean, I know it sounds hokey, but we really are, like, everybody that you see me involved with at DC, from Bendis to Tom, I'm literally going out to dinner with Bendis, Tom, and Capullo tonight, and Frank Miller. Talk about Batman stuff and whatever, like, we are friends, you
yeah.
know, and Jim Lee, like, I've been here 10 years next year, you know, and so I don't feel threatened or challenged by somebody coming on and doing something on a book that I was on. I'm excited for them to do something mm-hmm. their own and different, and I love encouraging that or trying to sort of help them if I can, and or stay out of their way if they have great ideas in general.
Why do you love Top Chef? Is it because, just like me, that you are fascinated by the process of creation and
yeah.
people that are excellent at it?
Oh, I mean, it was like a total antidote to all the horrible reality shows where it was like people are on TV for having zero talent whatsoever.
Right.
And you're like,
you're thrown
people,
on an island.
I know. And you're like, these people actually can do things that I can. And it's amazing to watch. We watched that, the Great British Bake Off,
oh, yeah.
which is like the least Batman show of all time. But still, it's pretty awesome. Mary Berry, but it's awesome. So
yeah.
no, I love shows where people come on and do amazing imaginative things, which is like watching comics. You know?
Yeah, for sure. You did the Metal series.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it was it was out there.
Yeah, it's
but,
meant. Yeah,
but
it's,
but and it was great. And I wanted to ask you, like, when you're writing something that you know is going to push the limits, when you're writing something where you have an alternate universe Batman who becomes a Joker and kills his whole family, and all these ideas that you put into that book and in that series, is there a moment where you're like, are people going to understand it, or do you not care?
No, I care. I mean, I definitely, it's weird because I really felt with that one, like, people had gotten really complacent and bored with events, and that they had gotten just sort of lazy, not the creators, but readers have
right,
been like, oh, it's an
yeah.
event, it comes along, whatever. And I wanted to be like, I'm going to make an event that is so out there and so grabs you by the face and says, these are supposed to be fun.
Right.
You know what I mean? These are supposed
right.
to be. When I was a kid, I just remember Infinity Gauntlet, Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
You know, those things got you because they were like, whoa, that's crazy.
And they also reverberated.
And they reverberated.
Right.
I wanted to do something that was like, this story reminds you of all the sort of bombast and lunacy of comic book storytelling. It takes all your favorite pieces and blows it out to 20 and says, we are here to enjoy ourselves and go crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very, very proud of it in that regard. So it matters to me that people get it or whatever, but I honestly, the only way that you're going to make anything special is to push the limits, believe in the thing you're doing, and then hope that people follow. And luckily, like, I can't even tell you, like, the fact that it did as well, I never thought it was going to do as well.
You thought it was going to be more niche?
Well, I thought it was going to be, like, a smaller event. The fact that it wound up becoming our best-selling one ever was just beyond for me.
Right.
Yeah, so now I have to do Metal 2 sometime, right?
Right. You're on Justice League now, and I remember reading the first few issues of it and saying to myself, it felt like you were pushing Batman back in the background a little bit. And I was wondering if it was like by design, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hey, what's up?
Just a quick. I'm sorry.
No, no worries.
No. Good to see you.
I'm gonna come find you. Where are you?
I'll be back here. I gotta go find.
All right, I'll be here I'm here for a long time.
This is what you were saying on Twitter before, man. It's like a family reunion, right?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Like, Priest helped me. We went back and forth about doing some stuff together, and when I did Justice League, we are friends.
Yeah.
Like, there is not... I know some people are like, oh, it's, you know, cutthroat, or... It's not. We actually like each other, and we support each other.
That's awesome.
And yes, we're competitive in some ways, but...
All right.
I don't know. It's just bullshit.
We finished the Justice League.
Yeah, sorry. Oh.
No, it's fine.
Yes,
did you pull him back?
I am.
You didn't want to be the guy who's going to put his guy in there?
Well, people started posting these memes that were like, when Snyder writes Justice League, and it was like... a meme that says it was Batman standing like this with the Justice League, and it says it's not the Justice League, it's Batman and his bitches. And I was just like, I didn't want it to be Batman the leader, Batman. So I'm playing him a little bit more in the background, a little bit more for comic relief right now. And then he has some really big moments coming up in issues, you know, 14, 15, 16, around then, like, he really steps up in a big way.
We've talked about this in Puck Soup before, and I'll ask my final question. Are you the least bit jealous that you didn't get to show Batman's dick in one of your books?
No, I am not. The thing, I'll say this, like, I love Azzarello and Lee Bermejo. They're both friends, and I think, I know that there's a big hoopla around that and that kind of stuff, and that it went a little crazy about the news cycle, but ultimately I hope that people will refocus on the fact that when you have a character that's 75 years old and you do a story that's actually really challenging and different and elliptical the way that story is, regardless of that page, it's actually quite a big achievement. And Lee's art looks so beautiful in that issue. I really hope people will revisit it, like, past the kind of circus around that.
It's a beautiful penis.
Well, yeah.
Reporting for you. Well, that's all.
Thanks, brother.
Hey, man. It's great to meet you.
Our thanks to Scott Snyder for joining us here on Puck Soup. Puckhead, celebrity Puckhead. Batman's. I thought we had talked about Batman's dick on the podcast before, but we didn't.
I don't know. Maybe. I feel like we probably.
But
did.
That specific instance of them publishing, an artist rendering of Batman nude.
Gonna have to burn my eyes.
And his beautiful penis. Were you impressed by?
I mean, you know, if you're gonna draw Batman's dick, that's probably how you should draw it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like resplendent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This dick shows you the good and the people of Gotham's drawings. Batman, you want to put a cup over that? I'm not wearing hockey boots.
Oh, there it is.
Yes.
I'm a shower, Alfred.
What? Master Bruce? Batman's dick. The Batman's dick thing was part of the Black Label thing that DC Comics was doing for Batman, and it was sort of the edgy, sort of adult, you know. And that stunt may have actually sunk the whole experiment of doing more edgy adult comics.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know, man.
I feel like if you're DC, you're probably making billions of dollars. You probably don't need to do anything.
You probably don't need to stunt it.
Formula works,
right? Yeah, I know,
right.
I know.
Like, yeah, you know we're missing? What? Dicks.
Yeah. Marvel's not like, you know what? Well, like, people are really curious about Vision.
Someone had to, like, stand up in a meeting and go, I have an idea.
Well, no, I think what happened was, like, the dude just drew it. And they're like, oh, that's so edgy and artsy.
Like, we already paid him. I guess we have to go with it.
Yeah.
He's not budging off of this.
I still don't know how you don't have a nude Batman meet Condiment King. That'd be very awkward.
Condiment King?
Yeah. You don't know who Condiment King is? Condiment King is one of many Batman villains. He is a Batman villain who shoots literally ketchup and mustard out of two guns.
Oh, from the Lego movie.
Why did you think... You mentioned on the mailbag, I think, that you thought I hated the Lego... Oh, no, it was during the Lisa on Ice episode.
Yeah, you said you didn't like the Lego movie because it got all emotional.
It got a little bit... You know, I like when you... I guess the shift in tone was too much for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I liked the Lego movie. Mm-hmm. I liked the Lego Batman movie to... You know, it was the Lego Batman movie that made me pissed off. It wasn't the actual Lego movie. Remember that? Remember at the end?
Same deal.
No. At the end of the Lego Batman movie, they all work together. And, like, it's all, like,
Batman
a message.
Batman learns.
We need to build a giant ladder of people and traverse the gaping hole in Gotham. And yeah, I hated that.
Okay.
But the Lego movie made me, like, cry.
Oh.
About a father and a son.
Okay, so it wasn't the feelings. It mm-hmm. was more of the teamwork that upset you?
Oh, yeah, I hate teamwork.
Teamwork.
I'm a real lone wolf.
I can do this on my lobster thermidors.
That's right. Oh, good reference. Indeed. You know what? Maybe you're a fan of teamwork. If you're a fan of teamwork, you probably want to watch it live and in person.
It's the best way to do it.
That's what SeatGeek, a proud sponsor of the Fuck Soup podcast. You know, getting tickets online can be far too complicated with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's hard to know who to trust, and that is why SeatGeek is the way to go. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading each ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Through the frequently mentioned green circles on this very podcast. Mm-hmm. The bigger and darker the green circle, the sweeter the juice. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Confidence. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need the perfect gift, SeatGeek has you covered. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I find it to be the easiest way to shop for tickets, whether it be baseball. Gonna probably get me some NJD Devils tickets at some point this season. Take a little one to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what I use. And I thank everybody for using it too and sending us pictures of them sitting in games and being like, I use SeatGeek.
Yeah. Thanks, Leahy.
Best of all, Puck Soup listeners can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP. That's SOUP. Soup. I like to eat broth. Because I don't like to get adventurous in my eating. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have tickets, but getting tickets means that I would have to leave my house.
You don't have to leave your house to get the tickets.
But I would have to leave eventually to go watch the thing I got the tickets for.
Sorry, Sean. I was trying to get you pumped up.
No, I like going to seafood restaurants and ordering a cheeseburger.
Let's talk about the Predators banner situation. Now, the Predators decided to have a little bit of fun. For those who don't know, they raised the banner that read "Regular Season Western Conference Champions." They took a ton of shit for it.
Didn't it just say Western Conference Champions? The words "regular season."
Regular season. That's why they got shit for it. It said regular season.
Right.
Western Conference Champions. They are neither the first nor the last team to do so. The Capitals have done it. The Sharks have done it. The Red Wings have done it. The Dallas Stars have done it. Other teams have done it. So again, like it's not the but they're having fun with it now. They tweeted out a thing that said they raised the banner. It said hottest chicken in the NHL, coldest building in Nashville, and regular season bachelorette party capital. That's funny. But it doesn't change the fact that they did something titanically stupid.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, like, those attendance championship banners make more sense because, like, that's could be a thing on its own if you really wanted it to. But when you win the President's Trophy, that's the President's Trophy.
Right.
That's both conferences.
Right.
That's the whole league.
That's the whole league.
So...
It kind of reminds me. It's a banner that signifies that you made the playoffs. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's like raising a banner that says playoff participant.
Your division championship banner,
right? But it's either division champion or regular season Western Conference champion. All you're doing is basically saying we participated.
But that's what the
it's a giant participation
says.
Ribbon.
It doesn't make any more work for somebody to do.
Like, and all the conference championship thing does is be like, but we participated emphatically.
We really
participated.
Like, like, so hard.
Yeah, bro. Like, we totally gave it our all in the three-legged race on field day, and we earned this participation ribbon.
Like, imagine, like, you win a gold medal at the Olympics, and then you also, like, raise better than third place banner, better than second place, or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the equivalent is. It makes no sense. Then again, this is the franchise that credited David Poyle with the most general manager wins in history and put that on the ice.
Oh, boy, does he ever have the most. I got called out, and they're like, Why are you, again, you're slagging on David Poyle. I'm like, yeah, I guess in some ways I am. I just, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's like, do something of consequence before you raise a banner.
Question, now that I never thought of this, so now, how many GM wins does Lou Lamoriello have? He doesn't have more than David Poyle? He was booked for just as
David
long,
Poyle
right?
was the GM of the Capitals in like the 80s, wasn't he? He was GM before Lou.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Era, I also was the general manager of really shitty teams for a while.
But I feel like Lou's teams were always better than the Preds were when the Preds... I don't know. I never thought of it. I never went to go look it up. So just stop it right now.
I mean...
But I guess obviously it's not. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. Like, but.
I'm happy you brought it up because, I mean, with due respect to the dominant success of David Poyle in the regular season...
Here comes shootout wins. Oh, you're going to do playoffs. Oh, they're going to, like... disqualified David Poyle on shootout wins or something.
Lou Lamoriello is exponentially a better general manager than David Poyle.
He was.
Yes, he was. But I mean, if you're talking about best GMs of all time, like, where the fuck is David Poyle in that conversation compared to Lou?
I see.
Compared to Rutherford. Rutherford's a better GM than Poyle. What, no? I was bold.
But, like...
I made the Kessel trade.
Yeah, he also just showed up and had the two best players in the world on his roster.
I also do a thing where if Chad LaRose needed a job in Carolina,
yeah,
doesn't matter if it's the sixth or seventh time, I'm going to invite him to my office and give him a Werther's original and say, Chad LaRose, you've got a job on this team.
So right now you would take...
GM ranking right now!
Jim Rutherford over David Poyle right now.
Rutherford over Poyle.
No. I don't think I would.
Here are the GMs I would take over Poyle. Rutherford...
I wouldn't.
I'm trying to think who else here.
Yeah.
Would you
take Kyle Dubas, or would you treat him like Rod Brendamore as someone who's never done the job before and put him last? Huh?
I can't take Dubas yet. And you know what? In all honesty, I can't take Dubas yet until I see what happens with Nylander and with Marner and Matthews' contracts. Then I'll take him.
Okay. But yeah, like, I mean, right now, who would you take over David Poyle? Where we're making jokes. We don't get any good answers, do we?
If you were starting a team tomorrow, would you take Yzerman or Poyle? That's right.
Poyle.
You would take David Poyle over Steve Yzerman.
Steve Yzerman didn't draft.
Would you take David Poyle over Ken Holland?
Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
So is there a general manager working today that you'd take...
I don't think I would.
So you're saying that Dave Poyle is the best GM in hockey? No, on paper, that's probably true. The team is well constructed. He's made some bold moves. The Subban trade was great.
Trades?
Everybody's under a decent contract. They've got a ton of cap space. Like, it seems like maybe he's done all he can to set things up, and yet there's something wrong with the recipe. As of right now.
And he really wants you to know he was not part of the Austin Watson suspension decision. The Predators were not involved in that, David Poyle said in a statement.
Yeah.
How's that for a segue?
That's a good segue, and I do appreciate the Predators letting us all know that a team that willfully employed Mike Ribeiro and continues to willfully employ Austin Watson.
Not us. We didn't do this.
Yeah. We did not appeal the suspension. We just simply pay his salary in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bold.
Reducing that suspension by 33%.
So...
By the way, I'm talking ahead of... I'm getting ahead of the...
Let's set it up. So Austin Watson received a 27-game suspension from the NHL for domestic assault. He was... he pled no contest in July to a domestic assault charge, and the NHL suspended him for 27 games. He appealed to a neutral arbitrator named Shyam Das, which I'm shocked that George Lucas did not create this name. Shyam Das.
That's what I was curious about. Was like, do they usually release the name of the arbitrator?
They do.
Do they? Okay, because I felt like they wanted everyone to know these certain facts.
What they didn't do is release the ruling. they usually send out like a PDF of the ruling, and they didn't do it this time. And I was told off the record that the reason they didn't do it is because either side, the PA or the NHL, do it is because of the details of the assault inside of the thing. There's no reason for people to have to relive that.
That's fair.
So it got knocked down to 18 games, and I as I said on Twitter, and I know that people weren't thrilled with it, but like if you're someone like Steve Simmons, mm-hmm. who took a run at the NHL for reducing the suspension, it makes me question whether you're qualified to ever comment on anything involving a suspension because you apparently believe that the NHL had a hand in reducing a suspension that was ruled on by a neutral arbitrator and was petitioned by the National Hockey League Players Association. The NHL suspended Watson 27 games. The NHLPA fought it, and a neutral arbitrator who was, by the way, collectively bargained for by the players in order to appeal suspensions above Gary Bettman, ruled that it needed to be knocked down to 18 games. So the NHL, I've seen people be like, well, the NHL should have suspended it for 50 games.
Right.
What do you think what do you think is going
to
happen?
Well, that's the thing.
That they just cut it to 25? No, they're going to knock it down to something that they believe is the right number commensurate with other suspensions.
So you think the arbitrator would have picked 18 no matter what they started at?
I think the arbitrator would have picked less than 20.
I don't know. That's hard. I have not.
You think if they gave him a season that the arbitrator is like, no, it should be half a season? The whole point is that there's no precedent for 27 games. That's the whole point of it.
It's just weird how, like, in baseball, when guys get suspended for this, they're like, I'm not going to appeal. And also, it's kind of different, too, I guess, because, like, by the time, like, the suspension comes down, the guy's already been suspended for a certain amount of time. But, like, I don't know.
So here
it's all just gross and bad, and I don't like it.
Watson was arrested June 16th after a witness flagged down a police officer to a gas station in Franklin, Tennessee. Watson told police he and his girlfriend were arguing and that he pushed her. Officers said they found red marks on her chest, and she said Watson caused them. Watson pled no contest to domestic assault on July 24th. The NHL said, we firmly believe that the right of appeal to an arbitrator of league discipline was never intended to substitute the arbitrator's judgment for that of the commissioner, particularly on matters of important league policy and the articulation of acceptable standards of conduct for individuals involved in the NHL. We will not hesitate to adhere to enforce, through firm discipline as necessary, the standards of personal conduct we feel are appropriate for the league. Basically, you know, we think that this neutral arbitrator thing is shitty. The NHLPA. The NHLPA takes domestic violence seriously and continues to work together with the NHL to ensure that players are educated on this important societal issue. The CBA provides players with the right to appeal discipline imposed by the NHL for off-ice conduct to an impartial arbitrator. This essential right is intended to encourage the fair and consistent application of discipline. The arbitrator's independence helps ensure that the process and decision are fair. That is a principle to which we should always strive to adhere, even in cases where the subject matter is as difficult as domestic violence. So we take it very seriously, but we appealed on behalf of this guy to make sure he didn't get punished super bad.
But, like, can't, like, the PA or somebody just tell Austin Watson, don't appeal. Just take it. Like, is it the 9 games of paychecks?
I think Watson wanted to get his money back. And I also think the PA feels that the more that they appeal these rulings from the NHL, the more precedent it'll set for their guys. And, you know, maybe it won't be domestic assault next time. Maybe it'll be something different.
Yeah,
and now there's different benchmarks for it.
But that's different. You can't, like, if a guy, you know, hits a guy in the head with a stick, that's not going to be the same.
No, it's on ice, though. This is all for off-ice shit.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Like, why? I mean, if it's precedent for off-ice stuff, why would you want to come across as being soft on that as the PA?
It's just a tough look for the PA, like, to go to bat for somebody.
Right,
like
that's
this.
Why. Like, yeah. I, like, in baseball, I feel like not every time, but like a lot of times, it's just like the player doesn't appeal. They're just like, yeah, that's one of the ways you show that you accept what you did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When you're appealing, it comes across as I deserve less for doing this awful thing that I did. And I don't know, I mean, I get why he did it, the appeal, I mean, to get like the money back and stuff, but like, I don't know. It's not great.
It sucks. And I think the NHL did the right thing here. I mean, they 27 game suspension for something that doesn't have any precedent to it. They probably I tend to believe the same thing's going to happen to Tom Wilson, where they swung the hammer at him and there's not precedent for him getting 20 games and it'll get reduced. But they tried to give him the right suspension in the eyes of a lot of people. I think there are people that thought that the NHL should have come down harder on Watson. I think that a lot of people were happy they came down as hard as they did on Wilson. But in both cases, it's like they're trying to move the ball forward on the amount of games they give guys, but this process exists to knock it down.
But, like, so what if this happens again? There's, like, another domestic violence situation. It's similar to this. Is the NHL going to say 18?
No.
Or are they going to say 27 again?
They'll say 27 again.
Like, that's...
You know, each case is going to be on its own merits, probably. I don't know. It sucks. And then on top of that, Austin Watson also, like, infamously was, like, the face of... an entire initiative in Nashville to talk about domestic violence and respecting women and stuff like that. It's a real ugly situation.
It's not great.
No, but hey, the Predators had no hand in it.
David Poyle wants you to know.
Yeah,
wants to make sure everyone knows that.
That's right. Mike Ribeiro. Just all I'm gonna say. Fucking atrocious. Let's change topics and talk about something else atrocious. Eli Manning. You're a Giants fan. You spent the entire day after the Giants-Eagles game watching people trash your boy, trash the legacy of Eli, openly question why he's still playing in the National Football League. How do you react to that as a Giants fan?
I can't believe they're starting him next week.
He's so bad. Why is he so bad? How
many more does he have to do to show he doesn't have anything left?
Is it just he got old? Like, what's the deal? Why did he
was never really that good to begin with.
Oh, come now. How many Super Bowl championships does this man have?
Okay, it's two games out of how many?
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't be. He should. Like, the thing that I keep coming back to is last year, Giants said, hey, Eli, you're not the starter anymore. And everyone was kind of like, okay. Let's see what Davis Webb's got. And they were like, we're going to put this Geno Smith guy out there who we know isn't good enough to be a starting quarterback. So it's like, if you're going to bench Eli, like, you have to either put in Davis Webb or now this year go to this Kyle Lauletta. Don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, the Saints have Drew Brees.
Yes.
And they're trading for Teddy Bridgewater. And the Giants are like, nah, we don't want Teddy Bridgewater. We're good. Teddy Bridgewater can move. Like, Eli Manning has cement bricks for feet.
He does.
Just give me anyone who can just shuffle in the pocket.
I'm still trying to figure out how you go from, like, he can't even complete a pass.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too, is the whole team is bad except for, like, three guys. And that's always going to be, the thing I keep coming back to last night was, like, the Giants were terrible. They had four situations where they could have gotten a turnover. They tipped two passes that ended up being completed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
They caused a fumble in the start of the second half where if they got it back, they would have been down two scores deep in Eagles territory. Somehow no Giants player fell on the ball. And then at the end of the game, when it didn't matter, whoever was a punt returner for the Eagles calls for the fair catch. The Giants gunner just flies by him. Eagles punt return guy drops it right in front of him, like 5 feet in front of him for an easy recovery. It wouldn't matter at that point, but like the whole team is bad.
I'm sorry.
The whole team is really bad.
I was trying to remember like the last time we've had an athlete that had it and then lost it. Because
hasn't had it.
No, but I disagree. Like, but at one point he had it though.
The year they went to the playoffs and lost to the Packers, that defense carried the Giants every game. Like, he's been missing Odell for years. Like, he can't – see the catch he made last night on, like, third down where he, like, turned his body, caught it with one hand.
I mean,
the first
it is one of those situations where if you've lost it and you're a shitty quarterback, you still have this receiver that can make you
right
look good.
And all he does is just – it's bad. I wouldn't change anything in terms of, like I love Saquon Barkley. He's going to be awesome for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it's like the Giants – there were some quarterbacks floating around before. The Jets were like.
So what is it? Is it loyalty? Is it blind loyalty to a guy that won them Super Bowls?
I think that's what it was last year. I think this year. I think like Dave Gettleman was like, he has some stuff left, and I wanted to like knock on his door and be like, look, you haven't watched as much as me.
You're like, no, he doesn't.
I can tell you for sure that he doesn't. I didn't think he was going to be this bad. Where like even when he gets time to throw the ball, he still can't hit anybody. But they showed a clip too. I didn't even notice until I saw Deadspin today. But like they cut to the sidelines and like
Eli threw like a 3-yard pass. They cut the Pat Shermer on the sidelines, and he was like, "Throw the ball!" And at that point, I was kind of happy. I was like, "Oh, now we're going to change quarterbacks." No, Eli forever.
Eli forever and ever.
Oh, man. And it was also weird, too, going into the week, because if the Giants hadn't lost on a 63-yard field goal, nobody would have been writing those stories, even though they could have, and they would have been true, and now it's just...
But I'll say this about the Giants. They look damn good in that game. Look at those fucking helmets. Why do they not go back to those helmets? Those beautiful Lawrence Taylor, Carl Banks era Giants helmets.
I saw those uniforms before the game, and I was like, yeah, tonight's the night. Mm-hmm. And then two passes into the game, Eli got picked, and I was like, I am so stupid. I am a dummy. I am a sucker.
It's weird when the Giants are bad because they're like one of those teams in the New York metropolitan area that always seem to be good. Like, even, I mean, the Yankees are kind of like that now. People forget when the Yankees sucked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fucking, we're around 25 years ago when the Yankees sucked. But the Giants always consistently seem like they were just always pretty good. You know, maybe there was that one year where, like, Dave Brown was the quarterback or whatever the fuck. But, yeah. Like, the Giants have always been pretty good. They didn't have violent swings and quality like, oh, I don't know, the Mets and Jets have had, says the Mets and Jets fan.
Yeah, the Giants are going to be bad for a while. They're not going to get any better for a while.
No. Does the NFL need New York?
No. The NFL, they print money.
Oh, yeah, people are watching the NFL again this season, right?
Dude, the NFL's been really good this year.
It has.
There's like, it's weird. Like,
remember when we were at the bar together with Ruby and like all the games were like getting towards their finales and we were all like, you know, the NFL is really problematic, and I know we shouldn't like it, but fuck, this is great.
It was like the end of the 1 o'clock games. It was the Saints-Browns, crazy game.
Yeah.
And, like, every game was ending. We're, like, trying to flag down, like, the person controlling the TV. Can you also put this game on this TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's how pretty much every – like, even, like, the Giants game last night was bad, but, like, the Eagles – that's the thing is, like, as long as you have one good quarterback playing in a game, like, you'll always be entertained. There hasn't been too many quarterback injuries.
It's a real double quarter pounder sort of situation. Just like,
sure,
I know this is bad for me. I know it's bad for society. Mm-hmm. I know it shouldn't exist. Oh, but the sweet mingling of grease and cheese and ketchup all together.
Boy.
Dancing on my tongue like a ballerina.
And now this Sunday, I don't have to watch the Giants. I'm probably going to get a good game in my area.
People outside of New York probably don't understand that, do they? Like, what other city has that where it's like, right, the Giants at 1, the Jets at 4, or whatever, and then you're just stuck with those two games.
I still don't understand the weekends where, like, it's Giants at 1, Jets at 4, and you don't get any other games. But sometimes you get, like, simultaneous
games
alongside the Jets or the Giants.
Yeah.
Now there's no Giants, so who do the Jets play this week?
What, the Colts.
Jets game. Oh, Jesus.
That's right. Here we go. Big time game.
I don't know who you could have said there, or I would have been excited, but...
That was not the Colts.
Like, Jets Broncos. I wasn't watching that last week.
Hey, I saw A Star Is Born. Do you have any questions about it?
No.
Okay.
None whatsoever.
The only thing I'll say about it, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned this before anywhere, but like,
I thought I said no.
I was actually talking to Katie Nolan about this before. Uh-huh. Well, that's right. Katie Nolan said hi to me.
This whole story is a name drop, but go ahead, sure.
In the movie, Lady Gaga plays like a mousy girl from Long Island. Andrew Dice Clay is her father from Long Island. All of his friends that hang out at their house are pretty much from Long Island. Her best friend, who was played the son in Hamilton, was from Long Island. And yet the movie took place in Los Angeles. And it tripped me out when I found this out because, like, there's actually, like, a Slate article on Where Does A Star Is Born Take Place? Because what are the chances that there's an entire, like, enclave of New Yorkers in Los Angeles, and yet that's what happened with this movie.
Does the movie take place in Los Angeles?
It does. Oh. It's very odd.
Oh.
But, like, everybody in her sphere is from New York, or has a New York accent, including Dice.
Well, if it's, like, one family living in L.A.
Yeah.
Sure.
Andrew Dice Clay. Andrew Dice Clay is her father. What a weird second stanza of a career, right?
I don't know anything he's done besides this.
Oh, he was in a Woody Allen movie. That's who rediscovered him. Just to make things less problematic.
Oh, sure. That's great. I'm glad you wanted to talk about A Star Is Born.
A Star Is Born made me cry. I cried during the Shallow scene when they sing together. I like Bradley Cooper a lot better as a director than an actor, I decided.
Hmm.
He did a good job directing that movie, but, you know, as a gristled country music singer or whatever, not my cup of whiskey,
no,
per se. But you'd love it. It's got good songs.
Don't think I'm ever going to...
Oh, no, I think you'll definitely like it, yeah. You're going to have to see it because it's in the cultural zeitgeist. Like, you're going to feel pressure to catch up with the times and see what everybody's talking about. Nope. You know? No? It's not... No?
Like a minute ago, you said, do you want to have any questions? And I said, no. And you still did it anyway, so... No point why I feel forced or compelled to see
loved
that
it.
Movie.
Loved it.
I'll read the Wikipedia page.
Awesome. That's perfect.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
To experience.
That's how we do this show.
The movie.
The Puckstoop Podcast question of the week was, which coach gets fired first and why?
Yeah, I like the and why part of the question.
Well, I didn't want people to just be like Tom McClellan over and over again without telling me why.
Well, like whoever they tell you, the answer is going to be obvious because they're not winning. That's why it was funny. Tom McClellan, because he's going to lose a lot.
Fucking literal Dave over here.
David.
Fucking. You'd be the worst athlete. Dave, what was the key tonight to victory?
Score more points.
Oh, did you see the one? I forget who it was. One of the baseball players during the postseason said, can you talk about something? And he was like, no.
No. Yeah, it was the Red Sox pitcher talking about the Yankees. He's like,
can you talk about your success against the Yankees?
He's like, no.
No.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Boom.
All right. A lot of people are saying Phil Housley. Yako Ryutu says Phil Housley because reasons. That's almost as good as your fucking
there you go
response.
Because he's like whatever.
Matt Kramer, Housley, too much talent to play so poorly. Really?
He coaches the Sabres.
The Sabres, right?
Double check.
Okay, let's get down to some of these answers here. A lot of Jeff Blashels. Lee Bryan, Jeff Blashel because his assistant coach Dan Bylsma is a better coach. David Blanks, Blashel, because they won't have any wins, and Bylsma is just sitting there for them. Is this? Are we on the cusp of the Dan Bylsma renaissance?
I mean, Jeff Blashel, like he has like almost no choice but to get fired. I don't know if it's because Dan Bylsma is there. Like, it could be you there, Greg Wyshynski on the bench with the headset on, just waiting to take over, coach his team to 27 wins.
Drew Hall says Rick Tocchet because it's Arizona. I think Tockett's safe. Pat Clark writes in, Randy Carlyle, the bottom is going to fall in Anaheim after everything normalizes. The good start will make that fall even harder.
Yeah, John Gibson. Goalies keep coaches in positions.
Yeah, unless John Gibson gets injured. But I thought that could be a possibility. And if, again, like we talked about earlier this year, they've got Dallas Eakins down in the AHL ready to take over the team if and when the time comes.
So, like, if John Gibson gets hurt, then he's just like, well, John Gibson got hurt. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this nice little safety net.
Reese Albrick writes in, trips over self trying to answer first, McClellan! Because she really has to use that bullet soon.
Yeah, I feel like it's McClellan or Blashel.
My new thing about McClellan, or about the Oilers, is I want there to be, when they fire McClellan, some coach of consequence that takes over the team. Like I wish that listen, I don't wish ill on the Blackhawks, as you know. I'm a huge Blackhawks fan.
Big Blackhawks guy. Ugh.
But if Quenneville got fired and got hired in Edmonton, how much fun would that be? Or, like, if Daryl Sutter came back. I asked our good friend Barry Melrose at the ESPN Summit if he thought Daryl Sutter would come back to coach the Oilers. And I think he said something along the lines of, that dog won't hunt, or something along those lines. But, like, somebody who has a ring and somebody who's a big fucking name in coaching to take over the Oilers would be super fun.
But, like, if you're a big name, wouldn't you just wait for Chiarelli to get fired?
But so, if you're a big name – oh, you're saying – because – but what, yeah. What if it's, like, one of those deals where, like, the coach survives? I don't know.
But, like, whenever a GM comes in, he always wants to hire his own guy, so...
Yeah, that's why a lot of people are saying Boudreau could be not long for this world. Olibar writes in... Matty Bones writes in Bruce Boudreau because it's got to happen eventually, right? And one assumes it would happen because Paul Fenton's then a GM. Olibar writes in Guy Boucher because his coach-hung pattern is conference final... Miss playoffs, and then the axe. Do you think he meant to write coaching and it came out coach hung? That sounds like an autocorrect fail of some sort.
he won't get fired. I feel like the expectations are so low.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, we talked about this in the season preview. It's like, why fire a guy that you then have to pay to not coach when you're Eugene Melnyk and you're that cheap?
Like, if they had any sort of expectations this year, you get fired. But I don't think he's going to.
Jake Nazar writes in, Tortorella makes culturally insensitive comments about Panarin and Bobrovsky as the Jackets hit mid-November slide. And when asked to apologize, doubles down. Jackets left with no choice to fire him. Couple of Ruskies over here.
That's not impossible. I'm not going to rule out that scenario. See, now I'm glad you said why in the question.
Torts, five in a row, a bit of a losing skid. Any comment? Yeah, if those vodka-swilling KGB agents would just stop playing better.
Have you seen Red Dawn? That's what it's like here now.
First they steal our emails, and then, oh, come on, Torts, why? Brian Coble writes in, Hackstall so Gritty can take over behind the bench. Of course.
Philadelphia still has not grown tired of Gritty.
Wolf.
Good for them.
Oh, woo-hoo.
Yes.
John Stevens in L.A. Been there forever as an assistant, but still not getting results, especially with the new offensive weapons. He made the playoffs last year. He got them from being sad under Daryl Sutter to making the playoffs. I think he's fine.
They were happy. Happier. They'd have to be, I mean, they'd have to be bad. Like, he's not going to get fired if they're, like, hovering around 500 through 40 games or 30 games.
Jeff Hunsicker writes in, Hackstall hasn't changed anything on the PK in the last 2 years, and it's been horrible. Benching young guys who need playing time or veterans with no future on the team. My theory on Flyers fans hating Dave Hackstall is this.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a Philly guy. He doesn't look like he could win a bar fight. He looks like maybe he tabulates the damage in the bar after the fight and then decides how best to go forth with the insurance claim. But, like, you think about LaViolette. Like, LaViolette looked like a fucking Philly guy. You know, he walks into the bar, hey, fuck you. Hey, fuck you, punch in face. Craig Berube, obviously. Like, Dave Hackstall does not fit the mold of what a Flyers fan would want their coach to be. He seems a little mousy.
Okay, so in your bar fight theory, who is getting beaten up by Ken Hitchcock?
Everybody.
Come on.
Ken Hitchcock, here's how
he's the bartender.
Here's how a Ken Hitchcock fight goes down, okay? Ken Hitchcock is at a bar, he gets into a verbal altercation with somebody, and they go, get the fuck out of here, fatty! And all the boys go, yeah, fatty! And he walks out of the bar. He comes back in, dressed like a Civil War general.
Okay.
With a sword at his side. And he takes out the sword, and he said, charge! And he just slices everybody up.
And he slugs his ass.
Like fucking Uma Thurman and Kill Bill. That's how a Ken Hitchcock bar fight goes down.
So murder.
Yes. Oh, he doesn't take any fucking... And then, of course, he slices flesh off their bones and fries it up and eats it. Because he's fat. And, why is there?
And apparently Anthony Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he feeds Ray Liotta's brain to him, like in Hannibal. Hold on, you ready? Here we
go. Dave Hackstall could totally get fired this year.
Here comes the last few Flyers coaches: Roger Nielsen, crazy man, could win a bar fight. Craig Ramsey, sure. Who's this? Bill Barber. Look at this guy.
Yeah,
look at this guy. He looks like.
Yeah.
Looks like a psychopath.
Sure. I'm with you.
Hitchcock, we just went over. Oh, the last guy who also Flyers fans hated, even though he fucking did fine with them, was John Stevens, who also doesn't look like he can win a bar fight.
So you think everybody just hates a coach who looks like he couldn't win a bar fight?
By everybody, I mean Philadelphia fans. Don't like a coach that doesn't look like he can win a bar fight.
I just think Dave Hackstall should probably get fired anyway, but he'd have to have a bad 20 games.
Down in the playoffs last year. Okay, Claude Giroux did, but he was the coach. Hmm. All right, finally. Okay, Bill Peters, according to Chris Neese.
Come on.
Because he isn't good and doesn't utilize good roster properly. Oh, I like this. Me fail English. That's impossible.
Flames are 2-2. Mm-hmm. It's too soon for me to start doing Bill Peters, Carolina, Rob Brendamore stuff yet. But we'll check back next week. We'll see.
Finally, QC Devils writes in, Gerard Gallant. because the Vegas Golden Knights have gone 9 straight games without a regulation win since letting Imagine Dragons play on the ice before a game. We should probably bring this up.
Mm-hmm. Just stating facts.
Some people might believe this is a bit that you're doing, chronicling the number of regulation losses that they've had since Imagine Dragons played on the ice before the game.
That's not a bit.
But you are
I'm just a
forensic pathologist. You're tracing the ills of the Vegas Golden Knights to the appearance of...
I mean, I'm just... There's just two facts. One is that Imagine Dragons played on the ice before Game 2, so like a final.
They did.
And the other half is their record since that happened.
That's right.
You know, no judgment, no connection, just two unrelated events that are happened to coincide. And I that's all I know.
Do you relish the fact that they've fallen off a cliff since the Imagine Dragons incident?
I had Vegas winning the division this year.
I had Vegas winning the division too. Now, I didn't go as far as Cervelli went and had him winning the cup.
Oh, man.
Frankie.
Oh, I love Frank. I love him so much. Like, I really wanted Vegas to lose on opening night just so I could do it one more time.
Now you're greedy.
It's like it needs to end sooner because I can't have them be like 1-11 because I'm on the Vegas
bandwagon.
Oh, I was gonna say boat. I'm trying to think of like a Vegas. Well,
I mean, if Vegas does fall apart, it does open up the door for my sweet Oilers to make the playoffs when they turn their ship around.
Someone's gonna make the playoffs in that division with like 70 points.
It's gonna be me. It's gonna be the Canucks. How about that? Wouldn't that be an upset if Vancouver made the playoffs?
Oh, man. Like, we talked about this before, but, like, I was definitely pondering Carolina and Arizona as, like, prop bets to make the playoffs. And, like, Vancouver's was – their odds were crazy high. And I was like, you know,
someone will make the jump. They'll make the leap.
Like, someone – I think someone in that division is going to – but, like, I don't know. It's too soon.
Got Patterson. Get Besser.
What is the shotgun thing everyone's doing with Jake
Virtanen? I think that's an invention of our friends, the curtain bloggers, where they're doing like shotguns for Jake or whatever.
I see them do it, but like, what's the bit? Like, does he ride shotgun on a line or something?
I don't know the bit, but all I know is that Halford retweeted 17 people shotgunning beers in Vancouver last night because Virtanen scored.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the origins of it, but
I mean, good more
bit.
Power to him.
Good bit. You're drinking beer in the bit. It's a good bit.
That's right. All right. It's Pucksy for this week. Thanks to Scott Snyder and the folks at DC Comics for allowing him to speak to us about hockey and Batman's dick. Thanks to everybody who wrote in for the question of the week. The mailbag segment will be on the Patreon for your listening pleasure. And also, the fabled Lisa on Ice bonus episode.
It's finally here.
It's finally here, ladies and gentlemen. So give that a listen. It was a fun look back at when The Simpsons was good, and also how we got into it, and also an episode that's really, really. If you've not seen it, we were laughing a lot watching.
It's a good episode.
Yeah, good episode.
It's probably on the internet somewhere. You can go watch it for free, right?
Yeah,
sure.
All right, that's Pucks for this week. We'll see you next week, and bye.
See ya.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
This week's episode of Puck Soup was sponsored by Sonos Beam, the smart, compact soundbar for your TV. Lets you play everything you love, from music to movies to radio to TV to podcasts. That's kind of what I use it for. I like to roam through my house with the dulcet sounds of a podcast following me from here to here. All with the rich sound that fills the room. It's super simple to set up, but even if you don't want to bother, Sonos will send someone to do it for you. That's right. If you live in any major metropolitan area up and running, we'll have a Sonos expert deliver and set up your system absolutely free. The Beam is awesome, man. It sounds like surround sound in your room without having to set up all them speakers all over the place. One big bar, great sound. I love it. And just order now from Sonos.com. Select up and running at checkout to see if you qualify, to see if you live in a major metropolitan area. Sonos.com, Sonos.com. Select up and running to see if you qualify for an expert delivery and system setup. Sonos Beam. the smart compact soundbar for your TV.